The Retirement Resource, Episode 17, Happiness and Retirement. Welcome to The Retirement Resource, the one place committed to providing the information, resources, and tools you need to navigate the often complex world of retirement planning with confidence and clarity. We're going to discuss both the financial and non-financial aspects of a successful retirement, and we're going to have fun. Welcome back to The Retirement Resource, the one place committed to helping you navigate the often complex world of retirement planning. And one thing we're committed to doing here on the show is making sure we address the integrative approach of both the financial and non-financial aspects of a successful retirement. And I'm back with Coach Joe with our Coach's Corner segment here. And we're going to be talking about an interesting article that Joe brought to the table. And we're just going to kind of dig a little deeper and see how does this apply to our transition and our retirement as we move forward. So Joe, let's cue this article up and let's dig into it.
Yeah, it was, and thanks. Great to be hanging with everybody again today on the Retirement Resource. I always love coming back and butting heads with my beau here. So good to see you. And they know that we can see each other. I'm telling them right now our secrets. So beau, yeah, I ran across this article, right? And it was about the happiness spending threshold.
Okay.
And that boils down to like, what does it really mean to live within your means? And I found it fascinating because there are so many ways we can come into this conversation, right? You know, everything from, you know, living within your means how much money I have left in last week's paycheck to carry me into next week's paycheck on one extreme. And on the other extreme is, you know, I'm my Scottish grandmother's coin purse and the original pennies that were first minted are in there.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, what do we got on each end of the spectrum? And what does it mean to live within your means? But also, too, what does it mean to, you know, meet a fulfilled life within those means? So anyway, that was really what caught my eye. Where I'll set the table here on this conversation for me and you here is everybody's life is a goldfish bowl, right? We all swim in a different goldfish bowl. The typical household is satisfied at around $70,000. How much more do I need to be, quote, satisfied? If I pass the 70K threshold, what's all that spending that happens after that doing for me?
Right.
And the happiness spending threshold addresses that, right? It's all about, hey, you got the 70K nut here, all right? That should take care of the basics, some other cool stuff, and you're good to go. What do I need with this other 100, 200, 300, 500K that year?
And why am I pursuing that other 100, 200, 300K? That's an important question because this research, you know, things are relative with expenses and what kind of a lifestyle you set up for yourself. But this article was talking about for most people and when surveyed, the $70,000 covered people's basic expenses. And there was almost a diminishing return as we try to bring more money in when it comes to literally how happy it makes us. Now, what I find fascinating, Joe, is that that's in direct conflict with what we're taught, what we're sold, how we're marketing to from the time we're little babies. We're taught if I have more stuff, if I have more money, if I have more things, I have more value, I'm better, I'm good. And stuff and money equals happiness. So it's really fascinating that we bring this up in the conversation that the research indicates maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm chuckling as I hear you say that because yes, that is what we're told. And, you know, to bring a little bit more, definition around this, you know, the article talks about to live within your means simply means to spend less on your lifestyle than you generate in earnings, right? And I think we've all heard that. And we've heard that from professionals like yourself and others, right? Spend less than you make kind of thing. Okay, great. And to live within that threshold, you know, you just spend less than you earn. However, this is clearly easier said than done.
Sure.
If you give the majority of Americans the opportunity to come up with $500 for some surprise expense without putting themselves in debt, at least temporarily, they can't do it.
That's right. It becomes a debt issue, especially when we get into retirement, because if we don't adequately have a reserve, or what's often referred to as an emergency fund, in place, what becomes our emergency fund is exactly what you described. It's the credit card. And the problem with the credit card being your emergency fund, as soon as you get a little ahead, you try to catch up on that. Guess what? The next thing outside of the budget shows up. So it can be a never ending cycle where you're going backwards with interest as you live like that. So that's a big, I guess if we had one thing that's a caution or a red flag, is let's honestly answer that question. Do I use my credit cards as an emergency fund? And if I say yes, maybe that's an area that we could address.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the debt sharks out there, the guys that and gals that have made a career out of counseling people in debt will tell you no.
Right.
You know, you want to build a cash reserve. There's usually two of them. There's an immediate cash reserve you got in a secure place. Maybe it's 500, 1,000, 2,000 bucks. And then you've got a bigger emergency fund, right, that's sitting out there that equals 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year's worth of pay, depending on what you need in terms of a buffer.
Right.
And this is really where what I get into here. And it's interesting because I've been researching a blog that I'm writing right now that talks about being prepared. And what we're talking about here is, in a sense, there's a few moving parts, Bo. Part of it is the habit to spend less than you make. But another habit is the ability to plan to build a buffer for the unexpected so that you can take some more stress out of your life.
You know, and that's one of the often neglected parts of financial strategy, is there's really three significant jobs that we've got to make sure we account for. And there's subcategories of each of these. But within that, there's growth, which gets a lot of attention and a lot of marketing and a lot of media. There's income. We got to make sure we have a proper strategy for income. And then what we're saying, there's a liquidity factor that if we don't have those in the right position or the right allocation or percentages for your specific situation, we run into problems. I think sometimes almost going back to the marketing and what sells, is sometimes the other areas get more bandwidth or more airtime, so to speak, because they're sexier to talk about.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's continue to set the table a little bit more here to give some people some idea of what we mean, because people might be rolling their eyes right now and going, you don't understand, or you don't know my life and all that stuff. Right. Okay. So I want to say to all of you out there, listen, we get you, all right? But let's put some more factors around this. And before we get into what I'm really interested in on this, all right? Dominant categories, right? And not, these aren't surprises for us. 26% of what we spend on the housing, mm-hmm. right? 14 points on transportation, all right? So that's cars, trucks, whatever. Food's another 10%. And healthcare, 6%. Of the other 29% not spent on lifestyle, about 20% goes to Social Security, FICA, payroll, right? And that's Fed and state income taxes. And the remaining 9% or so should be, and sometimes does, go to savings.
Okay.
And so that annual savings works out to be a little more than $6,000 per year, $6,000 per year. All right, if you hit that model, you are hitting that threshold. Now, if you're affluent, you could be spending as much as 40% of your income on taxes and debt service.
Right.
And this takes me to where I really want to go next, which is we talked about, I started this out with, you know, we all live in our own goldfish bowl here, right? And that is, forget about the goldfish bowls that are on either side of you. Focus on your goldfish bowl, right? You may look over next door and go, that's a big goldfish bowl. And I really wish I had that. And how come they get to have that? And guess what? Mm-hmm. They could just as easily be having the same stressful conversations in that goldfish bowl that you're having in yours.
And oftentimes, Joe, what you'll notice is using this analogy or metaphor of the goldfish bowl, sometimes the goldfish bowls that look the biggest and prettiest are the ones that also contain the most stress and under the surface. And you've heard different variations of stories I've told about clients that look very different from the outside, but sometimes the person that looks like a success is actually stressed out and maxed out and in debt. And the person that you would never take a second look at has a couple million dollars in the bank comes up often. And I think that's an important thing to remember. And the same thing, here's a good question, because sometimes we get the numbers are important and making the numbers work is important, because especially in the context of what we're talking about with retirement, it's a cash flow game for the most part, as far as financial success. And so here's the question I throw out there. Who do you think is happier in retirement? The person who has $10,000 of income and $10,000 of expenses, or the person that has $4,000 of income and $2,000 of expenses? Mm-hmm. Who do you think has less stress, more flexibility, you know, able to do more of the things they want to do and fulfill? So the numbers sometimes are relative and they're very specific to you. And there's no, when somebody asks me, how much do I need? It really depends. We got to look at the reality of the situation. What are the pieces there? And then how do we make that work in the best way possible that we can? And then I think where we're going next, Joe, if I'm feeling your vibe right, is then there's a whole nother aspect to this beyond what we're talking about with the financial. And it's, are we paying attention to where we're spending our time and our money and our energy to actually, what are the things about life or the things that I could be doing that actually make me happy? And am I spending my time and money and things in those areas?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like it's a weird sort of two-sided coin. Here's what I pick up. It's the perspective you just laid out. Right, which is, what is it that I really want for myself? What are the things that I have in store for me as I enter retirement, or as I'm preparing for retirement? These axioms don't only exist for those that can see the off ramp in front of them in the horizon. It can be just as easily happening for a millennial, a Gen Xer. We all experience this throughout our life, and one of two things happens: we either change our habits to relieve the stress and to gain a more fulfilled situation for ourselves, or we don't, right? And we continue to play this game, this broken record, right up until the end. And then when we get to the end, we're like, that was it? That's what I got to live? And some people I think they enjoy living on the razor's edge. I like spending 10K and I like making 10K and I like spending 10K, and it's a vicious circle. But for a lot of us, I think it's just a matter of taking the habits and making a shift on them. So I do believe that, you know, this is a challenge for a lot of people, no matter where they are. I also believe that you can start out in a smaller fishbowl. And as you grow, right, if you take a fish and you put them in a bigger fishbowl, they grow.
Right.
Right. And so they get lazy, they get careless, or they start to take on other things that first start out to be a luxury, then start to become normal, and then they start to become stressful. And one shift, and now you're in, you know, the same feelings you had when you were living in the house next door. You're in the smaller goldfish bowl.
Right.
And so I guess what I want to throw out there is, look, you know, let's stay in our bowl for a minute and focus on what it is that makes us happy, what we want to make us happy, and work on that. Because next door has the same amount of issues in most cases. And just because there's two lawyers living next door to you and they're making a ton of dough and they're going on vacations and driving cool cars, and have, you know, just this giant house, doesn't mean that they are somehow on a better track than us.
Right.
Right. They can have the same foundational issues that they're challenged with and still be making the same right decisions in terms of their percentages of spending that we laid out earlier in this podcast are the same. They're saving the same percentages, albeit bigger than yours. However, it's servicing a bigger goldfish bowl.
Well, and as we state often on the show, Joe, we're about both. If there's a lot of money there and we're spending at and investing our time in the things that are truly meaningful to us, hey, you can have both. I love it when we can make it work when we have both. But I think really what we're driving home today is that total focus on the money. The money just needs to work. And again, it comes back down to the cash flow. Do we have expenses going out that are less than what's coming in? And then to me, the big thing that's a shift, and it's a mind shift, again, from what we're taught, from how we're raised, so to speak, is that I call it the terminal illness test. And this is, it's an awful, I feel bad, I feel weird even saying that, kind of creepy, but it's something we do whenever we're in an event or a meeting or a coaching type of scenario, is what would you do if you had a terminal illness and you knew you had 12 months to live, 6 months to live, 3 months to live? And I think one thing we can do is, once the money piece is taken care of, why don't we live our life like we would if there was true time pressure, and stop living under this illusion that we have all the time in the world? Because we've all been around long enough to know that that's not always the case.
Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. Don't be too hard on yourself about how you label it, because it wakes people up. I always say in my coaching experiences, if tomorrow doesn't come where you're at right now, how excited are you about being in that place?
Right.
Right. And so I think when we're looking at it as two professionals with just a little bit of different vernacular around it, and that's exactly what we're saying. It's like, hey, man, is this what you want to finish up with? Are you good here? And if you're not, well, then let's look inside. You know, let's look around our goldfish bowl and find out what it is that's not making it right. This whole thing, what caught my attention was that even if you are making a lot of money and you're able to bank a bunch of it, you know, let's say you make, you know, you're a couple and you're making $500,000 in income, mm-hmm. and you're just spending 50% of that. So about 250K of that is gravy. You're so much farther past the point, the threshold of happiness. What is that getting you, right? I mean, unless you may say, well, look, I have this goal. I want to live in a penthouse over Central Park. And so I have to fill up the machine right now and let it work for me so I can spend the rest of my days looking down on that park and enjoying city life.
Right.
Right. Okay. I get that. Otherwise, what are you hoping for there? What is it that's that much bigger? What do you got for me?
What are you hoping for? And I think the important counterpoint to that is, what am I potentially trading off for that?
Absolutely. What am I giving up to get to that point?
And it goes back almost to our essentialism conversation from our last time together we had together, is what am I trading off? And is that truly honoring my values, my priorities, and what in my heart is the most important things to me? So it's funny how these conversations come full circle, but it's because the principles and the core of them, they're the same.
No question. I love that you brought essentialism back into this mix, because we just talked about it on the last show, and this is exactly where it is. You know, what is it that you've given up? I saw a really great video off of LinkedIn a couple weeks ago, Gary Vaynerchuk, the famous marketeer. You know, someone asks him, he does these videos where he's walking through airports and people come up and they kind of crowd around him and shout a question, and then he stops and gives them a minute or two on a sort of a selfie video and says, here's what I think. Someone asked, you know, well, what is it to take to, you know, be successful? And he's like, hey, you can do all these cool things. You shouldn't have to give up your evenings. You shouldn't have to give up your weekends. You can still work hard, be smart, make a couple hundred K a year, leveraging all of your creative juices and all your, you know, compassion and wisdom, and make that happen and live a good life. And really, isn't that awesome? Or you could do what I'm doing and you're surrendering a lot.
Right.
Right. You're surrendering a lot. I'm, you know, working gazillion hours a week. I am not taking vacations. I have to make sure that I force myself into a healthy lifestyle when I can, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm paraphrasing his video, but he's saying, you know, that's a whole different ballgame. I'm jet setting around the world, hanging out with other equally or better smart people so that I can learn to be better, smarter, richer, faster, whatever. That takes a whole nother game. In the end, it works for him. He likes that stuff. It fuels him. Does it fuel you or me?
Right. Is it in line? What are the trade-offs? I think those are great questions to ask, because what I find, Joe, sometimes when we say, what do we want life to look like? What do we want retirement to look like? Sometimes the first couple passes, it's what the magazines tell us it should be. It's what my family tells me they think it should be. It's what I've been told by someone at work that it looks like. And that's just the best answer I have, because I haven't really done a lot of work thinking through it. But I think a lot of the questions we brought up today is, let's keep asking that question until it gets clearer and clearer. And we're really looking at this. Does this honor the things that are most important to me? And I'll tell you, when you know you're getting really close, it truly excites you. let's keep refining until we know we're so in line with what it is that's meaningful and fulfilling to us that we've, of course, the first goal, we need to get you above that threshold so that money's not just a drainer and a stressor constantly.
Yeah.
That's not a place to be. But then let's honor those things and let's keep asking those questions.
Yeah, I like that, Bo. I mean, the $70,000 to me, I look at that as sort of like that's the treading water.
Right.
Right. I'm in the goldfish bowl. I'm treading water at 70K. Right. So let's make 70K really buttoned down. Let's make sure there's no leaks on that 70K. Then we can look at professionals like yourself and others out there, accountants and lawyers and all that stuff, part of our team. We've gone through the team conversation and we're going to talk with them and reflectively look inside our own goldfish bowl. Everything I make on top of that serves what purpose for me? What's it going to get me? How's it going to honor my values? How's it going to make me feel? So that I know that if I'm saving an extra $6,000, it has this thing going with it. And that's what it's attached to. My 70K is buttoned down. It's good stuff. I'm covered. Now everything above it serves this purpose.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. It's perfect sense. Everything above it should be in pursuit of those things we talk about. Meaningful, fulfillment, living life well.
We've talked about values a lot, you and I, and so I want those of you that have been sticking with us that are listening right now, if you haven't done this, go back, grab your partner, your significant other, or if you're on your own, you know, you can grab a friend to test this out. What are the values that you hold dear? What are the things you want to accomplish? Do they match up? Are the things on the right-hand column of the doing stuff match up with the values that are in that are important to you? If they're not, get them out of there because that's just a vacation. Those are just vacations, right?
Right?
Those are hobbies. The things you really want to accomplish, do they match up with the really cool values we have? You know, integrity, truth, pride, honor, whatever, family.
Legacy.
Legacy, right? Volunteerism, whatever it is, you make those up. You get the idea from the words I'm using as examples. Go back and do it. For those who've done it, you're here right now, I'm going to give you something else to do. All right.
Perfect. That's where I was going because our time together is always way too short. But what are some takeaways we can really throw out there with this conversation?
Yeah. So try this out. I'm working on this one right now. So I ask you to join me in this project. All right. Pick out when it is that your next big flag is in the ground. For me, it's 4 years. All right. So 4 years, I want to make some significant changes. So my wife and I we're going now. We're looking at ways that we want the next 4 years to look holistically. Mm. All right. So it's not about tomorrow I'm going to do this, Wednesday I'm going to do that, next month I'm going to do that. That's stuff. Those are details. That's how we build on this. What do I want my life to look like next week, in 6 months, next year, in 4 years? What do I want to do with it? You can start 4 years from now and work your way back and knock off all the big steps. That's where we're starting our discussion. We're going to get together in about a week. We're going to face each other and say, this is what I want things to look like in 4 years. And she's going to say the same. And then we're going to start to take stuff off the table, maybe bring stuff on the table. Now it becomes a little bit of, you know, a shell game. What do we want to have happen? But at least, and it's flexible, Bo.
Right.
This is a flexible exercise. It doesn't mean in 4 years it must be like this, but you got to put some focus around it. What is it you want it to look like? Focus on it. And guess what? It'll happen. And if you start now and take it in small bites and have small wins outlined along the way, all of a sudden, 4 years from now, you're going to turn around and go, holy cow, this is the last thing I need to do. And bam, I am there. If you wait till 3 months before your 4 years is up, it's going to be this giant idea. Hey, I've got this big, shiny object idea. And what happens with those ideas? They just disappear.
They don't come to pass.
They don't come to pass. They're so damn big. It become insurmountable. It was a cool idea. Yeah, I wanted to live on a boat for the rest of my years. You can't now because you haven't made all the necessary mental and physical and financial and emotional arrangements to get there.
And this is work, Joe, that you're describing, very powerful work that is being proactive. And, you know, one of our sayings here on the Retirement Resource is in the retirement game, the proactive win and the reactive lose. And doing the work now, doing those exercises, give us a way to facilitate being proactive, because if we don't, just like you described, we get 3 months out. All that time before that, we were just kind of passively reacting and responding to life as opposed to actively creating the life that we want to live.
Yeah, and you and I both as essentialists now, since right. you've made me become an essentialist, you son of a gun. That's what we know, that if we take this thing in grandiose ideas, then we're going to be scattered into the winds trying to make all these little things happen. I want to try this. I want to try that. You hear the shiny object or the squirrel, or you have those friends, you know, and they react to everything. I want to try everything. Guess what? You are going to try everything, and it's going to be a lot of thrashing in the goldfish bowl.
Right.
Right. But at the end of the day, nothing has changed. So yes to all what you just said. I really, and I'm asking all of you out there listening to this episode, join me in this, try it out and see, and let Bo and I know how you're handling it. What's the holistic look for this? I don't want to talk about spreadsheets and what do I pay in taxes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You can do that later. You got an accountant, you got a financial planner. They're going to help you with that. What are the big things you want to accomplish? What do you want it to look like a year from now, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years down the road? Mine happens to be four. Make it whatever you want, but start now. And then are you ready for sort of three things and how to keep your head around this?
Let's do it.
Okay. I got three of them. All right. The first one is this. All right. We've said a lot of stuff. We took a funny journey to get here this afternoon, right? Take it easy, man. Take a breath.
Right.
All right. This is going to be a difficult process because you're overcoming all kinds of misconceptions or perceptions about yourself. And you want to reflect on those. And if you have a significant other in your life and family members that are going to be involved with you down the road, take them into the play here, man. Bring them in and have them play in this game with you. All right. It's got to be a positive experience. You want it to be fun. It's not like, oh my God, I had to do this by Friday and I haven't done it yet. I just had that experience. I said, look, give me another week and we'll do it this weekend. And I got a big thumbs up. Yeah, let's have fun with this. Okay. So that's number one. It's part of the retirement resource axiom anyway, right? Which is we want to have fun with it. So I want you to have fun with it. The next thing is this. Stop looking at your neighbors. Tap into your values, not others. All right. So tap into your values. We just talked about that. I won't go into it too much deeper. You know how to do it. If you've listened to earlier episodes or just got the recap from me, stop looking at the other goldfish bowls. It's a surefire way to bolster feelings of disappointment, underachievement. When you start comparing yourself to others' career trajectory, it's going to just make you want to go back and curl up on the couch and not move forward.
Right.
So focus it inwardly. And then finally, what's your current habit? All right. What's the cue? We're really trying to do is, have you recognize the cue and change the response to that cue so you have a different outcome, right? So what are the cues that have been maybe not allowing you to realize your potential of what you want next for yourself?
Give us an example, Joe, so we can follow.
Well, for instance, every time I get my tax check, instead of maybe going to someone like yourself and making an investment, mm-hmm. right, or paying down some debt, I go out and create more debt.
Got it.
Right? There's a cue. Every time I get a windfall, instead of taking care of something that, like either reducing a debt or investing in myself, paying myself back, I go run out and I spend it. That's a cue. Okay. And there are a lot of others there too. Every time my wayward son or daughter shows up, I give the money to them, right? And I'm going to see them in 6 months and it's going to be the same sob story. That's a cue.
Right.
Okay. And then what's your habit? What do you do when you have that cue? Maybe the next time you don't hand the money over to that wayward relative, or you say, you know what? We'll just order pizza out instead of taking a 3-day weekend down to Myrtle Beach. Right? We're not going to spend this. We're going to hand it to a financial planner. We're going to hand it to our accountant. We're going to go pay off that credit card and move one step closer to taking some stress out of our life. So just doing that alone is a victory, man. It's really important. So those are three ways I want you to be and do.
No.
All right, around that. And then of course the little project that I am doing myself. And would love for you to join me in that.
Have people join. And what I recommend to listeners, if this resonates, this process, this part of doing this work, check out what Coach Joe Shum has going on at soulpatchhippo.com. That's soulpatchhippo.com. com. I'm pretty sure he would be open to having a conversation if this is some of the things you're saying. You know what? The thing we're talking about my four-year flag, planting in the ground, moving towards that, I'm pretty sure Joe would be open to having those conversations and seeing what might be next steps or how to help facilitate that. And my wish for you when it comes to the financial aspect of retirement, that we get you positioned and we do the preparation so that you're above that happiness threshold, so that we're not being pulled backwards by stress and problems around financial issues. So my first goal is we get you above that financial happiness threshold. And then my second goal, which I think is the important goal, is that we start really intentionally, proactively living a life in retirement that you're absolutely excited about, that absolutely lights you up. And I think, my friends, if we do that, it's been a success for all of us. So look forward to seeing you next time right here on The One Place, committed to helping you navigate both the financial and non-financial aspects of a successful retirement, The Retirement Resource.